Another week passes and we still seem no closer to forming a government. Or are we? As the parties dance around each other and desperately try to think up new things to say to the media, we ask, is this really progress? Right now on the Johnny Fallon podcast, I'm going to look back on the week and try to figure out what the strategists just might be up to, and look at what this might all mean for the political landscape in the longer term. So sit back, have a cup of tea, maybe even a chocolate biscuit, and let's talk some politics. Well, as listeners to last week's episode know, I was actually away during the week, and it afforded me something of an opportunity to avoid some of the non-stop coverage of our government formation talks, and to think a little bit about the wider picture and what it might mean for Irish politics. Now, this was a week again where, I mean, look, I'm a news addict, so I was checking in on the news every few minutes I could. Even though I'm away with the family, I'm always going to sneak a look at the phone and find out who's saying what. And what always surprises me in these situations is how much we all hunger for news, how much we all hunger for every little item, quote, that might come out of it. And then you sit back and you ask, has anything really changed at all? And the answer is no. But I'm sure in somebody's scheming mind, there is some progress having been made. And a sense that this week is just part of that process, just a part of a certain amount of time that has to pass. And that got me thinking because, you know, when we talk about government formation, it's good, and there's a whole generation now, because we have looked at two elections where we've had this difficulty of forming governments afterwards, both in 2016 and this election. And there's no doubt this is part of the fallout from the financial crisis. And it's part of a natural fallout that will happen when you have a collapse of a major political force, like Fianna Fáil was in this country for so long. That's like taking a political system of which there's a pillar party there, and you whip that pillar out, suddenly part of the roof is going to collapse, and that's what's happened here. Now, that can be a good thing. I'm not saying it's good, bad, anything like that, but what I am saying is when you take something out like that, you leave an incredible vacuum. And the Irish electorate, when they decided we need to punish Fianna Fáil and get rid of them from their dominant position in politics, did create a huge vacuum. And we're still working through that vacuum politically now to try and find what it is. And most of those voters, one of the points to make when you look at this is how much all of the parties are still arguing about what their supporters want. Particularly intriguing argument for Fianna Fáil talking about what their supporters want, because Fianna Fáil have in the last decade gone from polling somewhere around 43% down to about 22%. So Fianna Fáil's vote has halved in that time. So when they talk about what their voters want and what their voters would like, they're talking about their current day voters. And what's really happening in the system is that there's about 20-odd% of people who since 2011 have been homeless as regards voting. And those people are looking for alternatives. And they look to Fine Gael, they've looked to the Labour Party, they're some of them looking to independence, others looking now to Sinn Féin, but they're still working their way through the system. And it's making it incredibly difficult, because what's happening in any political party, and Fine Gael have experienced this with their drop in vote, as you drop back, as your vote recedes, you're ending up with a hard core vote that is in a very extremist position. And you're losing something of the more middle road vote. You're losing some of the vote that was willing to reach out to other people. So, of course, the more you listen to your core vote, the more extreme your positions become. Now, meanwhile, Sinn Féin's vote is going up, but what Sinn Féin are discovering and have discovered, and they're at the positive side of this cycle at the moment, is that people start to increase your vote, then your vote starts to pull you more to the center, because they're getting more of those middle of the road voices beginning to come into their midst. And once that happens, they're going to be pulled a little bit more to the center, and they're going away from maybe some of that hard core vote that would maybe have had very deliberate positions on things. And that's something they're trying to work with, because they still have to keep that core vote happy. So all of that is where parties are suddenly finding themselves this particular week, and how they're trying to negotiate while talking to their own supporters who are getting more extreme in positions, and trying to reach out to other parties sometimes and not reach out to other parties at all in other cases. And that's all largely because they're still talking to their own core. And very few people seem actually interested in reaching out and getting other votes, new votes, wider votes, looking for that 20-odd% that's still wandering out there and saying, could we win that back in Fianna Fáil's case? Could Fine Gael win it back? Could any of the parties win that back? That's just not a question, it seems. In any event, there is a much younger vote out there, as I say, that has for maybe voted for the last two elections, and a vote that's become more politicised in recent times. And, you know, I couldn't help but thinking that over my lifetime in elections, it was generally quite an exciting time once the votes were counted. And I do worry a little bit for the activism we've seen. Let me tell you just the perception always of politics, and particularly young people being involved in politics. There was always this sense that young people liked referendums, and they like referendums for a very simple reason, that you can get involved. It generally is one particular issue. It generally is some societal change issue. You get involved, you work hard for a couple of weeks, and then you get a result. And that result is fairly clear. You either win or you lose, and that's it, decided. And that can be a very rewarding part of politics when you're involved in that. So for many people, one of their first electoral experiences tends to be around things like referendums, because if you haven't grown up in a political family, maybe this is the first time you become exercised by a particular issue, and then you get that feeling of getting over the line and winning. Now, political theorists, let's say, would tend to say one of the difficulties with that is that when you get into day-to-day politics, like general elections, it gets a little bit harder because you don't get those direct wins and results. But if you at least engage some of those people, they'll get to know and be a bit more patient about it, and yes, turn some of them into party supporters. But here's the thing, I wonder, because one of the things that I always enjoyed about politics was that although, you know, that long-term thing does happen, day-to-day politics is not about getting results easy, and it is about working through it, at least when you had the election was fun. And you went through the election and you campaigned hard, and then you got your candidate over the line, and then you had all the excitement of that. And then you at least knew where you stood after the election. A government was formed, and you were either getting out and opposing that government, or you were part of that government and you were going to change the world. But whatever outcome, there was an outcome. We now have had two elections where we don't even get that. We're not even anywhere close to being able to say, what is it? Who won? And that feeling of actual victory, or that feeling of having achieved something in the election, is gradually being killed by this idea of how long it takes for people to actually just get round a table and take some decisions. And I can't help but feel, you know, when I look back, there were times, and times when it could take a while to form a government, but you knew the direction of travel. You knew that negotiations might take a while, but you knew what the parties involved were actually up to. You knew who was generally going to form that government, even though there'd have to be votes and debates and a little bit of to-ing and fro-ing. And maybe a chance that one party could gazump another by forming a separate deal. But it all happened within some kind of parameters where we had an idea of this is the direction of travel, this is where it's going to go. The last two elections, we haven't had that. I mean, In 2016, to me, it was obvious that there was only one outcome of that election possible, and that was a minority Fianna Fáil government. Yet weeks were wasted talking about grand coalitions. It was a complete red herring and was never a good idea. But, you know, it was one of those things that was put up there and then never distracted everyone for a while. And now I just feel that we're in a habit that the people who talk about organising governments now and what it takes to put a government together are playing by a set of rules that they've just kind of invented quite recently. And that set of rules tells them, you've got to wait a very long time and you've got to go through weeks and weeks of this and we've got to let people adjust and we've got... Why? When did that become the rule? Who says that's a rule? If we were talking about businesses here, that wouldn't be the rule. That wouldn't be a rule of negotiation that, you know, the longer we wait, the better. And if we wait till Easter, well, maybe that'll all work out. Why? And I don't get that. I don't get who's setting this rule that, you know, well, it took all this time in 2016, so now it's going to have to take even more time this time, and that'll show everybody that we're making an effort. When the reality is, these people need to sit down and make decisions. And fair enough, in some cases they are. They're saying, I'm not talking to these guys at all. But if you're not talking to these guys at all, stop throwing out. If you're in Fianna Fáil and you're not going to talk to Sinn Féin, fine. Okay, that's your decision. You've done it. I'll come to that in a minute again. But if that's your decision, then get on with the other talks. It doesn't take much longer than a couple of days in a room to actually figure out if something's possible. Instead, we're getting these red herrings thrown out of minority governments of all kinds of shapes and sizes. And what people are actually losing sight of here is what is the government ultimately going to look like and what's it going to be able to do? And that's the bit that nobody's actually thinking of. It seems to be that we've become obsessed with forming a government, and that's the end in itself right now. And how long that government might last, well, that's kind of irrelevant. Just form a government. Just get elected Taoiseach. What that government might actually do, well, we'll figure that out as we go. If you actually step back from this, and that's what I thought of this week, when you step back from it and you look, you think, some of these options are just insane. Minorities and minorities of so many people and independence and everything else, we're just going to hobble something together. And you think, you're designing something to fail. In the exact same way that when we designed the minority government in 2016, it should have had a purpose. It was a stopgap and it should have been seen as a stopgap. But a stopgap that couldn't last 4 or 5 years, because you were going to just get political inertia if you allow a system like that develop for 4 or 5 years. You have to go back earlier. It can do something to fix a couple of problems and be very clear that's all it was about to attempt to do because of the result. And then you go back to people. But instead, what we ended up with after 2016 was an attempt to make a minority government situation into something that could be a long-term stable government. And that crippled us politically, in my view at least, for years. And it's why the parties paid a price for that government, because they just created complete political inertia. And that state of paralysis, when it happens, you have to be ahead of that. And right now I'm not seeing that at the moment. I think everybody is dancing around this and saying, look, our view is that we should take lots of time. We should allow ourselves to adjust to this new reality. And that's not going to work. It's not going to work for the public, because the public are going to start getting really, really antsy about this. Because as I say, if you step back, you look at this and say, this isn't a complex problem. If you are going to form a minority government, then that minority government can only be to solve a particular issue or a couple of issues. And it's not going to last long. And you need to be very clear about that. And if you believe the country right now needs a strong form of government, there are only a couple of options, and they don't involve hobbling together myriads of people into one kind of government that will last for as long as we can try make it last. You've got to start discounting options and going, guys, that's nonsense. Let's not even look at that, because that's not going to actually provide us with a government that's going to take decisions people need. And that's the bit that's missing. Nobody is actually looking at it and saying, what does the country actually need as a government right now? Can we get that? And if we can't, and if you don't, then be straight up with people and go, guys, it's another election. You're going to have to come back and give some of us, whoever it may be, a much clearer mandate and picture to form a government. And that's simple as that. Of course, they don't want to do that because they're all afraid of internal rivalries and losing seats to other parties, and maybe we'll come back worse. All of that is clouding the picture. And I think it's at a real expense right now of the political system, because people are not able to see what it is that we're actually aiming towards here. What is it that we intend to happen at the end of all this? So that's my opening, if you like, for this, because I think we've got to start. We've got to start putting pressure on our politicians. Parliamentary democracy is important, and we've got to spend a lot of time, we've seen a lot of time people talking about it, and how it's up to the parties now to go away and find it. But it doesn't have to be like it is. It does not have to be endless weeks, because what is going on here is weeks and days of people saying, well, it's now, you know, Sunday, and I might talk to that party by Friday of this week, have a chat. What takes you till Friday? Pick up the phone and get on with it. Sit down and do it tomorrow morning, tonight, whatever. But move with some pace or urgency here, because that's what people want. Instead, we're having this, well, it'll be better if we wait. That's how. And they're filling themselves with a sense of, well, we know how to do this. Anybody that thinks otherwise doesn't know how to do it. We've seen this before in 2016. We believe this is the way it's done. And I'm going to come to why some of those things and some of those rules that they're creating are actually working against us. They're working against some of the perceptions of politics and the parties who are creating them, because there is a change afoot, and that change is subverting the system a little bit. And that's not always a bad thing, but it is going to work against anybody who's not aware of that change and seeing it coming. So, looking at the week that just passed by, what were the events in it? And I want to take a look at this through the prism of maybe two articles that I saw that were quite interesting. One was by Michael Clifford in The Examiner, where he talked about the first day of many of the TDs coming into the Oireachtas. And of course, I like the article because, you know, it is such a big day when you arrive in the Oireachtas for your first day. When you're even for supporters, that's who you bring up. You have them all there. You get to see everybody take their positions in Leinster House. It's an amazing feeling for those themselves walking in there, being part of that Dáil, have finally reached that. For many of these people, this is a lifetime's work to actually get to this point. So, you know, it's a fantastic day, a day of celebration. This time, as I say, they don't get to walk into that feeling of, well, we know what's happening, or there's a government, or we're going to be asked some big decisions. It's all a little bit up in the air as to how much or what their role is going to be once they're in there. But it was a big day for them. And of course, they are voting for Taoiseach. We had hoped that maybe there might be some interesting insights from the vote for Taoiseach. Not particularly. Nothing that gave us a sense really of the direction where these parties are going to end up. But we do know that the options keep narrowing and the parties keep narrowing their own options. So we can probably give a good guess as to what's going to happen. But ultimately, in the longer term, we know this isn't stability that we're heading towards. Now, Michael Clifford, he said in the article, and I'm going to quote him here, "A warm, giddy feeling permeated the air, floating around many of the 48 new members of Dáil Éireann. They made it here to the big house where laws are made under history's gaze. But what awaited them in this new, untamed world of multi-party parliament with no government in sight? Change, that's what. Change is the word. It's got groove, it's got feeling, but God only knows what exactly is its meaning." Unquote. And I think that is, for me, summing up where we're at the moment. Everybody's talking about change. But exactly what changes is much harder. And I think the public in general, the electorate, know they want change, but varying levels of change. For some, yes, revolution, complete change. For some, and I would argue probably many, it's a little bit of change. Just change how we do things, how we approach things, what our priorities are. But when you campaign on something like change, change becomes difficult because some people want certain things changed, but other things must remain the same. And change can't mean changing everything. So it becomes one of these words that everybody is trying to use and talk about, but nobody is exactly sure what it should be, or how it's meant to be, or what level of it. You know, in years past, we'd words like, oh, transparency. There must be transparency, and everything was about transparency. But how much transparency? I mean, government involves secrets at some level. There are state secrets. There are cabinet secrets. There are things that have to be in, and some people want no secrets at all, everything open. Then other people went, well, no, you can't have everything open. There has to be some privacy and there has to be other things. So, you know, this is all fine, but it's a little bit of transparency. So, again, it was one of those words in the past that confused everybody once they actually went around to implementing anything on it. But in the article, Mick Clifford talks a lot about how everybody, you know, approached it and the photographs and, you know, the Mary Lou MacDonald talking about the exclusion of the party by the traditional two of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. But he gives a real sense in this of everybody arriving up, but nobody being quite sure. And he mentions how Brendan Griffin makes a good line where he actually said he was quoting Axl Rose and said, welcome to the jungle. And there must be a sense of that. I mean, look, politics is always a jungle and it's always difficult, but there must be a real sense of being a little bit lost in the jungle right now because we don't really know where we're heading to for many of the TDs. But Mick goes on to say, the smart money still says that we will have a government by Easter consisting of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, the Greens and an other. Mr. Other may well take the form of a raggle-taggle band of independents. There will be protests that such a government does not represent change, and then everybody will get on with things in this new world of politics that has already changed utterly. Unquote. You know, I think that is where, you know, we're seeing the options narrow to the point where if there's to be a government of any kind of type that can last or tackle any kind of problem, then you would have to say Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, the Greens look to be the option that's coming into view because they're probably going to have some independence there with them and get that over the line. Now, that's going to be a really difficult government. And it is going to change the landscape because it's going to force parties to do something that they have never done, particularly Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. I think once they make that move, they cross a Rubicon that they're not coming back from. And I think the political landscape will have changed utterly. Maybe not right now, maybe not even as a result of the election, but definitely by the end of government formation, if that's the route that's taken, I think they cross a Rubicon. And we'll talk a little bit about that, but it is one where for all of those parties, there is a big, big discussion to happen as to what is change and what can a government do or should a government do. And what they're actually doing is forming battle lines for another election. And what they're actually doing is forming battle lines as they see it for the future. But when you do that, it's very difficult to redraw those battle lines. And that's going to be the piece that people are going to struggle with. Because do you want those battle lines? Is that what we agreed to? Is that what people saw? Now, Pat Leahy in the Irish Times also made the point when he talks about government formation. He said the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael will not crawl off and leave MacDonald to the stage. And in a very interesting article, you know, he points out a number of things about how Micheál Martin has put into his government formation and why he's closing out Sinn Féin. Now, his speech in the Dáil, interesting things on this. I mean, his speech in the Dáil were very much, he was being very clear as to why he did not like Sinn Féin and why he saw them. They're not legacy issues, but current issues and behaviours of the party that he had an issue with. Then we saw Mary Lou MacDonald get up and respond quite eloquently to all of those accusations. I'm going to talk about those two speeches in a minute, just some interesting communications around them. But you hear Pat Leahy in his article says, you know, many in Martin's party sharing his vehement opposition to the idea of sharing power with Sinn Féin cheered his words. Others, realising how much the party is boxed in now, despaired. They all know that there is no way Martin can or will change his mind on this. His position will have been bolstered by Friday's statement from Garda Commissioner Drew Harris, agreeing with assessments of the PSNI and British government that the Provisional IRA's Army Council still oversees Sinn Féin. Harris's word make it difficult, if not impossible, for either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael to consider Sinn Féin as a potential government partner. Other parties will face difficult questions. Unquote. And I think, you know, Pat hits a nail on the head there about how difficult this becomes now. There were options and moments and everything else for Micheál Martin to pull back. Really, there's not now. There isn't a credible way for him to come back. And there's not a credible way because it's not just about him swallowing his own pride if he were to go in with Sinn Féin. It's the fact that Sinn Féin now would probably find it impossible to work with him, that the relationships have been severed completely. And therefore, you're looking at a system that's now down to closing off all options and leaving us only with one. Now, the Dáil speeches were interesting because there was a huge reaction to some of the speeches. Now, Micheál Martin's speech, whether you agree with it or not, actually will have touched a chord with many, many people out there who feel opposed to the idea of Sinn Féin in government and will feel, yes, he clearly lays out in a quite analytical fashion what the problems are. And that's why many who are opposed to that government will have cheered it. And it will even have probably spoken to many in Fine Gael who will go, actually, that's where we're at with these guys, and that articulates quite nicely why we're not willing to ever consider them. On the other hand, anybody who's on social media will have seen there was a huge push behind Mary Lou MacDonald's speech and saying it was, you know, such a powerful speech and a retort to Micheál Martin and taking back and deconstructing his arguments. Let me be honest. As regards two speeches in the Dáil, I think they've both got a little bit overhyped by their supporters. Now, straight up, I don't think anyone's going to be searching for inspiration here. I think if you're a party supporter, yes, you'll find those speeches. Maybe you're playing them on the loop right now and listening to them and saying, that's my leader inspiring us, be it Micheál Martin or Mary Lou MacDonald. To be honest with you, for anybody else out there, no. Probably didn't even hear about it other than there was a good speech. But actually sitting down and being inspired by any of the words in them, no. Because, again, all of the speeches kind of focus a little bit too much on the nitty-gritty of their issues with the parties. It's something now in this new politics Mary Lou MacDonald has to be careful of, because what Sinn Féin did so well during the election was to avoid getting sucked into this tit-for-tat about politics and about parties and keep it focused on the issues people were facing. And by doing that, that's not just about saying we're here for the issues of the people. It's about ignoring and saying, well, I'm not going to insult another party. I'm getting on with being positive here. It is sinking into this thing, and there is going to be, I think, for Sinn Féin, a real challenge to keep their heads above all of the efforts to suck them back down into, come on, you know, we're going to insult you and you're going to insult us. And that's how this works. And I think, again, people are going to get turned off really quickly about it. What was interesting, Fionnán Sheehan pointed to the fact that Sinn Féin actually had their speech up within minutes of Mary Lou MacDonald making it on social media, and how long it took Fianna Fáil, something like 21 hours. It is an interesting point here on communications, because Sometimes it's the perception of it. As I say, I don't actually think these speeches are going to, you know, sway masses of people on it. Good speeches and all, as it were, eloquent and all, as it were, but I don't think they touched on things that really were going to make people sit up and take notice or change their vote in any way. However, there is a whole new audience out there. And it's something that we're forgetting. And I think, you know, Fianna Fáil, social media, all these things, they're not changing politics, but they are just changing some of the channels you communicate through. 21 hours for Fianna Fáil have got their speech up from their leader to have reacted to it. It just typifies what's wrong for both Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael in these kind of things. They're seen as just being behind the curve on this. And they look at these other parties and they're saying some of the accusations they're making. Now, I'm going to come to some of the ones and they're, you know, quite right to have their doubts about certain things within Sinn Féin. But equally, some of their accusations about, oh, well, they're all these bots and it's done with this military efficiency. It's just good organisation. You know, look at somebody's doing their job in their HQ. That's what they're there to do. They're paid to do a job. They go do the job. That's it. End of. And there's no point saying, oh, well, they do their job so well that it's a military efficiency that we find disruptive. Just get on with it. You know, pay your people, get them to do the job. That's why they're there. Discipline within parties actually matters. Organisation matters within parties. And having kind of thing of, what, I mean, do they want us to believe that they're sitting around in Fianna Fáil going, well, it's okay, you didn't really do a great job, but, you know, we like you. So, you know, look, if we just keep paying you, that's not how it works. So you end up saying, look, if you're not doing a good job, you're going to get sacked. That's the harsh reality of it. And all parties organise on that basis. So is there a gun to somebody's head in every party? To a degree, there is. Because you don't do your job, you're going to get kicked out. Aside from that, though, there is that kind of thing of communicating with a new audience that's out there, that's getting their news sources quicker, faster, and want to hear. They don't want to hear you coming back and saying, well, actually, we had a great speech too. That's too late. You need to be the one who had the great speech in the first place. And Sinn Féin are very quick to this, and they're very quick to how they communicate it. And yes, parties are right in that they say, oh, look, Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff, they're echo chambers, and majority of voters aren't even on them. The problem is the influencers in communities and groups and families are, and particularly younger influencers. And they're taking their lead from these. And they're not taking it blindly. They're not taking it just, it's because they're interacting. They're assessing it. They're hearing the arguments. And if you're in on these channels, arguing your point with them, giving them reason to believe it, they will take that on board. If you're not, and you're kind of going, oh, sure, look, that's just nonsense you see on that old social media, well, then you're not there to make your case. So that becomes a problem for traditional parties in how they approach communication of all of these issues. So, look, that's where, just in terms of those first days and that first I'll vote for Taoiseach, I think the speeches just showed how we're getting into this acrimony. Now, I want to deal a little bit with just why Sinn Féin in particular have now got, we're talking a lot about these rallies and what's going to happen. So I want to get in a little bit under the skin of that and see, does that matter? You know, is that going to be something that's problematic for our democracy? Well, this week, Sinn Féin decided that they were going to bring their brand of politics out to the public, and we were going to have some kind of public meetings to endorse Sinn Féin's position in government. And as of today, that's kind of the big news. What about these public meetings and how they're going to have them? Now, just to touch on a couple of things. You know, somebody contacted me during the week and they said, could this be considered defamation of a political party, what's happened to Sinn Féin this week? That they've gone in, they've gone out before the public, they've got a vote, and they're just getting these accusations. If this was individuals we were talking about, would it be something that would be like defamation? past is brought up, the accusations of it, who's running the party, all of that. It's an interesting one, because if you look at it like that, you probably could say, yeah, maybe it is. It's a difficult one because you have to have a debate about parties. Now, here's the thing. Sinn Féin have started out in this election where they've been a long time around and on the scene now. So we know what Sinn Féin's past was. We have a fair idea where its links are. And now suddenly we're kind of coming into this debate about their suitability for government here in the Republic. A huge amount of hypocrisy. Now, I've touched on this before, so I'm not going to dwell on it. But again, it's worth making the point. The hypocrisy here is we cannot be saying that I've grown up in a generation where killing was stopped in Northern Ireland and peace was brought to it because people said, we've got to talk to these people. We have to see that their belief is, whether you consider it right or wrong, that armed struggle was the only way. We've got to find a way to prove to them that armed struggle is not the only way, that there are other ways and other avenues if we afford them to them. And we did that. And Northern Ireland has come a long way in that time. But here's the thing. You know, over that time, we've spent a lot of time talking to Sinn Féin. Now we have this absolute crisis of identity because, well, hold on, Sinn Féin are now looking like taking power in the Republic of Ireland, and suddenly there's different rules applying here. There's different rules about what you can talk to, who you can talk to, who you'd sit down with, or what you would do with that party now. That, to me, does smack of hypocrisy. So let's put that out there first, because you simply can't. You can't have that view. If you've been of the view that previously, well, it's okay for the people of Northern Ireland, and it's okay for us to deal with them on other issues, but not just when it comes to government. So, yes, you know, is there an accusation? I suppose I find it a little bit worrying that parties kind of, you know, this whole debate, if you'd said a year or 2 years ago, do parties have this really big issue with Sinn Féin? You probably said they have an issue with them. I don't know how big it is. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, we've always been clear on this, that we never, ever talk to them. And it seems to be, yeah, you were okay with them when they were maybe on 10%, 3%. You know, maybe if they'd come back with 12 seats or something, well, we could think about a government with them then, but certainly not at the size they're at. So when I talked about how they're redrawing the lines of government here, possibly with a formation of some kind of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Greens and others, that becomes a new voting bloc. The reason that changes the landscape is because once you decide to do that, you're then saying to Sinn Féin, right, we're not dealing with you ever. And then Sinn Féin has, well, we're the party bloc on the other side, ourselves, Social Democrats, maybe that left-wing bloc. So again, you get that left-right, at least the appearance of left-right. I don't believe it's left-right. I don't believe that can happen or will happen, but it'll give everyone the appearance. And of course, certain people will welcome that. Now, the difficulty for Sinn Féin here is they've just been through an election where, as far as they're concerned, they've answered the questions and the people endorsed them. So let's deal first of all with, are the parties right? Are they entitled to do what they're doing? I think they're entitled to ask these questions of Sinn Féin. They're entitled to ask it because it matters to them, their voters, and they're going to attack. That's politics. That's what they do. Sinn Féin shouldn't be surprised by that in any way. Equally, you know, Sinn Féin have done the same thing. And one of the problems we've got here is while everybody's talking about, oh, Sinn Féin, you know, they're being attacked and, you know, it's unfair. Equally, Sinn Féin are doing the attacking here. This nonsense that's thrown out time and time again about, oh, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and their cronies and their builders and the developers and their all that. And, you know, if you're going to throw out all of that balderdash, then you're going to get the other balderdash back at you. That's how the system works. Your gunmen, your IRA, who's running your party? Who's running your party? The truth is, most of us in the public don't really care. We're just saying, what are you actually going to do? Who's running your party? Yeah, I realise there are issues there. But you know what? I trust that the Gardaí or others will sort out those issues. Now, there has been these questions that somehow Sinn Féin have been subverting the state, subverting the normal course of government, dangerous activities, all of that kind of thing. Now, let's be honest here. If this is going to work as a system, democracy has to start accepting a couple of things. Number one, the people have a right to vote for whoever they like, and the people judge that, end of. And parties do not have a right to start telling the electorate, you can't or you shouldn't, or I'll wave my finger at you and tell you, naughty electorate, you don't understand. That's wrong, and parties need to cop on about it. And that goes for all parties. It goes for Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael attacking Sinn Féin and trying to make out the electorate don't understand what's going on behind it. And equally, it goes for Sinn Féin trying to wave their finger at Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and say, oh, it's just some old-fashioned thing of old voters who don't get change and don't get how these corrupt parties have been skimming off the people. Balderdash. So get off all of that. Get off that agenda. Get on to what you're actually going to do. The second thing is, in a democracy, you have systems. We do have Gardaí. We do have a Standards and Public Office. We do have lots of criminal assets bureaus, everything else, investigating activities. You either trust those institutions or you don't. If you trust those institutions, then you say, right, if there is and where there is and when wrongdoing is uncovered and evidence is there that something has been done untoward, illegal or endangering of the state, action will be taken. Those forces, those institutions are there to uphold those standards, to protect the state, and that's their job. Right now, what you have is a sense of, well, we don't trust them because what's actually needed here is Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to actually police this. And our views is we won't go in with you because we think you're dodgy and you're subverting the state. If there was evidence of that there, surely, you know, look at it, should be brought forward. There is also nothing wrong with being in government. And if some other party is found to have done something wrong, well, that person is charged or removed from office. That's simple as that. You don't have to be responsible for that. So a lot of this talk that's going on there is a little bit outlandish. And as I say, a lot of it too is thrown back from Sinn Féin talking about, oh, well, you know, our trust in Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. And it's really just insulting for a lot of good people who are in parties that they're faced with these kind of accusations while they're doing nothing untoward or wrong. Now, does it matter who runs a political party? Of course it does. And it matters that you're able to discuss that and debate it. And it's quite legitimate for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to question Sinn Féin on that because there may be electoral capital to be got out of that. And that's what they're there to do. However, if you end up in a situation where that political capital, I mean, what is the point of it? It's there to win you more votes. And that's all. And that's what it just comes down to. But you must accept that not everybody equally is going to be changed by that argument. And if they're not, then fair enough, you accept that. We can't have a situation long term in this country where parties are refusing to deal with each other simply because they've got their perception of a party being out there or different or they don't like something about it. It has to get beyond that. Therefore, I think, you know, Sinn Féin need to scale back heavily on their perceptions. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, look, big old parties, yeah, but there has to be an acceptance in this country that they are just political parties. Political parties, yes, who've done some stuff wrong over the years, but you know what? They've done a hell of a lot right over the years too. And the nonsense that we talk about when we talk about change is that somehow the last 100 years have been flop, failure and misery. You know what? They haven't. We've had a lot of failures and a lot of problems. We've had a lot of really good stuff in this country as a country that was formed out of a revolution and then at one of the toughest times in history found its feet and had to work on limited resources for most of its existence. has actually proven itself to be quite a shining light as regards independent small nations. And that's something to be proud of too. And the parties who were to blame for their high unemployment and problems and institutional problems in the country, yes, all of those kind of things, they were there and they were part of and they were to blame for them. They're also entitled to some of the credit for some of the successes. So you know what, there needs to be a getting beyond that from Sinn Féin's perspective. And from Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael's perspective, they need to get beyond this too. And they need to get into a sense of what is it that Sinn Féin are about. The people are electing them. They know that there's talk of army councils, there's talk of all these things. But let's stop second guessing the people and saying they don't understand it. Maybe they do. But does it matter? It matters for electoral purposes. But as regards forming governments, no. That comes down to a simple legal question of is there wrongdoing or is there not. If there is, you remove someone from office. If there's not and all you've got is a feeling about something on it, well then you can't really act on that. So I do think it was unusual for Drew Harris to make the comments he did, but I think he needed to at the same time, because I think it is obviously something that this is a party that is run by an army council that is of interest to the Gardaí. And there's no harm in that being said. And Sinn Féin does need to deal with that question. I think it's been a positive that they are being forced to deal with that. I think it's a positive that they are coming out and beginning to talk about where are the IRA? Do the IRA still exist? Does anybody know? But you know what? I think Sinn Féin can and should deal with that. And I think they need to put that to bed fairly quickly. Not for the sake of forming government, but for the sake of their own futures and their own moving on as a political party. As those centrist voters move in, there's going to be a demand. And it's going to be much harder for Sinn Féin to actually control this party if it holds that vote, if it holds those seats, if it holds new members. It will find it very difficult to control them the way that perhaps it has controlled its core vote in the past. And therefore, people are going to say, well, no, you can't tell me what to do. And I want to know who's on the Ord Cóirle, or I want to run for the Ord Cóirle. I'm not saying that that's not what happens, and maybe Sinn Féin are comfortable with it, but they need to prove that to people now. And it is a challenge, because that's where the future debate lies for them. I'm not sure that we could say it's defamation of the party, but it certainly, because I think there's legitimate questions, but I do think that Sinn Féin too need to adjust. They need to say, right, the further we go, I know Sinn Féin will probably think they've been questioned harder than any political party. But again, they all think that. And you are going to say this to any Sinn Féin supporters listening, it's going to get worse. It's going to get a lot worse. And if you go into government, you can double it in terms of the scrutiny you're going to get. And that wouldn't be new to Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, who know that every individual has been gone through and talked about, and they've heard you guys talking for ages about how corrupt they were and unfair they were and accusations lying in here, there and everywhere. All of that stuff they've been dealing with, and they're still getting that. So, you know, if there's going to be any future, I think it's in some of those being able to get over these things and legacy issues. I think they have to be asked, but it is going to be a problem for them. But what about these rallies then that Sinn Féin have talked about? Because so many people are getting worked up about them. Now, it was an interesting piece on this, because Sinn Féin, what they've said is, look, we're going to hold a number of rallies around the country to get our support for us going into government, public rallies. And it's met with quite a lot. You've had, I think Simon Harris tweeted back, do we not just have this in the form of a general election and now it's the business of getting on with government? We had Alan Shatter say this was very kind of, he made out that this was going to be quite murky, that there was no unprecedented in elections that we would have this kind of thing going on, and that it was somehow unusual, and there's been almost again this sense that, oh look, here you go, here's Sinn Féin doing something now that looks a bit dodgy, they're now undemocratic as a party. So where does this come from? Well, the first place it comes from, to be honest, is the argument Sinn Féin have had for some time that, you know, look, we got 25% vote, therefore we should be in government. First and foremost, not necessarily. That's just parliamentary democracy. you know, it is the people give a choice to go in. And if it was a case of whoever gets the most votes is entitled to be in government, then Fianna Fáil should have been in government for pretty much all of the existence of the Irish state. They weren't, and they weren't because sometimes parties can get less votes and they're entitled to form governments. That's just the way it is. And there needs to be an acceptance of that, that you don't have a divine right for government. What you do have is a negotiating block. And the public give you a block of votes, as much as you've been able to corner off in terms of numbers of TDs, to go in and negotiate. So Sinn Féin need to accept that first and foremost in their own mind, that this may not be an opportunity for government because they didn't get the overwhelming mandate that maybe other parties have had in the past, and that's what they will need in order to get in. Now, looking at that then and saying, okay, so that's the first thing. So therefore, Sinn Féin maybe have felt they're going to go at this because, and I think, you know, some of the criticism of Sinn Féin, it's because they see Sinn Féin as believing they have a divine right to power. And some of the media have suggested that Sinn Féin seems to believe they have a divine right now to power. And they're trying to convince them of that. And therefore, they feel threatened by Sinn Féin going outside of what they see as the norm in order to attain power. And they say, well, you know, actually, this just shows that these guys don't get the system. Now, let's deal with the other side of that, because I think here, Sinn Féin, this is what happens when you remove options. Sinn Féin can't be expected to sit on their hands and go, here's the vote we got. Here's the people who voted for us. These people wanted us to be in government. They voted for us clearly because we said we were going to be in government and we were going to deliver change. Now that that's happened, what we found is nobody wants to talk to us. Nobody is going to. Even the Greens are now saying, oh, well, you know, because Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael won't deal with Sinn Féin, it's very difficult for us to see them being in government. So it's all a little bit like, no point here, lads. We've got to get on with it. But these guys are on the outside and we can't actually deal with them. Now, if that's your starting position, what is it you expect Sinn Féin to actually do? Do you expect them to sit on their hands and go, oh, right, nobody's talking to us? Well, you know what? Good run. Thanks for the votes. Well, you know, that's just it. So no, they have to make a play. And what they're doing is a reaction, not necessarily to trying to subvert anything, but trying to say, well, if nobody's going to talk to us, this is what parties are going to do. You know, when De Valera, Michael Collins, all that kind of, you know, when you go back to that kind of stuff, treaties and everything else, they weren't shy about going out and holding public meetings and getting people together and making demands. That's what you did. And sometimes I think when we look at Sinn Féin have a view of policies. You know, one of the articles that fascinated me during the election was when Fiona Sheehan went out with Ona Brin in Dublin Midwest and looked at how they were getting the vote out. And everything they were doing was stuff that I remember doing way back in the 80s that everybody did in political parties. And then it just kind of became uncool and unfashionable to be doing that old way of carrying on and all the effort that went into it, when there was better, slicker ways of doing things now. And Sinn Féin still do things in a very old-fashioned way. And those old-fashioned ways were devised by Irish political parties generally because they were trying to get around blocks and systems and difficulties with people and find ways of encouraging their vote to participate. Now, I find it a little bit amazing that some of this stuff is now being seen as new and different when really it's stuff that was being done 30, 40, 50 years ago. Sinn Féin just are closer linked to that idea of it. And here again, you're seeing where political parties have cast them out and said, we're not going to talk to you. But Sinn Féin are forced into a position of, well, then what do we do? So I think if you're a strategist, a fairly reasonable thing is to say, well, we have to convince our own supporters and the people who voted for us that we are trying. We simply cannot sit on our hands and say to them, well, we didn't make the effort. And we've got to make our case. And if the other parties won't let us make our case to them, Well, we can at least make it to our supporters, because what Sinn Féin are now going to have to do if they end up in opposition is keep that support base active, and they need to keep them energised, and they need to keep them believing there's a mission. And the only way you're going to do that is by talking to them. I mean, to my mind, every political party should be out talking to their supporters in the midst of an election. I find it ridiculous the Fianna Fáil have, with the organisation party they have, the party leaders seem to be sitting around waiting for a call in a week or 2 weeks' time, rather than their party leader actually being out in the various constituencies where TDs have lost seats or have only gained seats, where you should be down there talking to those supporters, telling them why you're taking the route you're taking, why you want to believe that this is the best route. That's where they should be. That's how internal party politics and good organisation should actually work. Not sitting on your hands in Dublin going, well, when the phone rings, we'll do it and we'll play some games about smart strategy. So I don't find what Sinn Féin are doing here hugely shocking. And when I saw it first proposed, I was kind of going, why is it even news? Because, of course, they're going to go out and meet their supporters. They've got nothing better to do. If they're not, don't have to be in Dublin for talks. Well, what else would they do? What do you want them to do? Head off to Spain for a week while the other parties form a government? Just in the same way Micheál Martin is not going to say, there's been this thing of the left-wing government should be allowed to take over and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael should just facilitate that by abstaining. Nonsense. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are there to represent their vote. They're not going to abstain so as a left-wing government that doesn't have enough support to actually become a government is allowed to become a government. It's not gifted. Power is seized. It isn't something that you just get gifted and say, well, please, can we have our turn of power? No, you go out there and you win it. That's what you have to do. So there's not going to be some abstaining on Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael's part. But equally, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael cannot suspect Sinn Féin is going to go, oh, well, do you know what? We realise we're making things difficult for you. So, you know what? We won't do any of that stuff that makes it difficult for you. We'll just let you get on with your negotiations to form a government. That's not going to happen either. So Sinn Féin are entitled to go out and they're entitled to have these meetings and they're entitled to do what they need to do to hold on to those votes and hold on to that support. And that's what they're attempting to do. So, no, I don't see the public gatherings as going to be some wild divergence from democracy. It's going out and having a party function. And unless every party function and rally that you have is a divergence from democracy, it's just, to be quite honest with you, I think some parties are a little bit lazy about having to get up and go down and meet the plebs on the ground and talk to them again and explain to them why we're taking the strategy we're taking. And maybe they don't actually believe that they'd have the support if they went out there for some of their strategies. But whatever it is, it's not wrong to actually go out and meet people and talk to them at any point. I would see that as quite a reasonable approach for a party like Sinn Féin at this point. I don't see why anybody would be against that. And I don't see any reason why Sinn Féin shouldn't do it. Yes, it does create, oh, well, you're off getting public rallies and talking up the people on the ground. Well, of course they are. If you won't talk to them, they're going to have to do something. That's what they're doing. It's a strategy, like it or not. That's just what you've got to do. So somebody asked me as well during the week, I think it was Brian Max Houston on Twitter, who asked me a little bit about this whole Social Democrats thing of no to FFFG. And he said, is it FF and FG or both together? And it sounds to me, I have to say, like the Social Democrats are saying no to Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil together. I think the Social Democrats, you know, it's been a bit of a surprising election for them because they've now found themselves here. They've got a good number of TDs. And there is going to be a little bit of pressure on going into government. I think that's difficult and tricky in its own right. But now they've got to figure out, well, do we support the government or not? And I think what the Social Democrats are trying to look at here is how much influence could they have in a government? And when you're a small party, you've got to be very careful about that. You've got to be careful about, you know, what is the balance within this? And particularly where you're going to have a number of parties all vying for support. So if you're the Social Democrats and you go in and you say, okay, well, it's Fianna Fáil, We don't get on with them. We think they've done a lot of dodgy stuff we don't like. But we will ensure that once we're in there, we'll have some influence over them, because we can also work with a party like the Greens, and we could get that. That'll bring a bit of balance of power to things. So there are like-minded or like-viewed parties around about us that help us. The problem for the likes of the Social Democrats, and indeed any party, and I'm going to give this warning to the Greens as well, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, big parties, big personalities in terms of their history and their organisations and the pressures they come under once they're in government. And the problem here is these parties are going to say, you know what, we believe that we have a right to defend our membership and our membership's views, and we're going to overrule you. And it becomes very hard when you're continually faced with, we bring down the government on every issue, and you could get overruled very quickly. So dealing, I think Social Democrats are looking at this and saying, look, if you're Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together, that's a lot of ego in one room. Irrespective of how many seats or few seats they might have, it's a lot of ego. We're not going to get much hearing working between those two beasts. And remember, those two beasts haven't even sorted out their own issues with each other yet. How much hearing are we going to get within that? And I think therefore they're saying no, that's going to pull things too much. They're also quite aware that, I've mentioned this before, Fianna Fáil will be, as you might say, an absolute centrist. It might have some left-wing kind of support within its base. But if it's in with a right-wing party, more like Fine Gael, it's going to get pulled right. And that's going to make it a much more right-wing government. That's going to be a problem. So the Social Democrats, I think they're simply saying, look, whatever hope there is of government, it's going to be a government that we at least believe is, we have influence in, and that influence is not going to happen if we're in with those two big parties. Brian also asked me, he said, what's the difference between the Independence Rural Alliance and the Regional Alliance? Nothing except it's a nice new name. Independence, I get into an alliance for one reason and one reason only, to get speaking rights and to get their views. But Independents never speak with one voice, and having an alliance there helps them get certain views heard. It's the embryonic form of how parties do begin. Initially, in the early days of democracy, everyone was an individual, but of course they all grouped together, because if you group together, you've better chance of getting support for some of your views to be heard and for to get things through. So groupings form, and eventually over time they can become political parties. Right now, Independents are doing this. It's a matter of expediency. They come together, they have like-minded views on rural Ireland, but actually forced to take decisions on anything, they can easily split away from each other, because that's the nature of it, and as it should be. And that's what we're going to have to look at. Okay, the other one I know is, I've been asked, Valerie McDermott asked me about the Labour leadership, and Val, I know you're a Labour, a major figure in Labour yourself, so you probably know more about the Labour leadership contest than I do. But I'm going to touch on this for a while, because it's going to be one of the interesting debates. Now, I think we might be able to talk a lot more about it next week, but to set a bit of scene here, for me, Labour Party has some tough decisions ahead, because with the advance of the Social Democrats, it is under threat, and it needs to find its voice and find that voice quickly. We know that having a new leader, we said that that was going to be essential first, that they do have this leadership contest, so they've got that far, they're doing that. As regards who can lead it or who should lead it, that's going to be a tricky one for the members, because there are opposing forces at play here about the future of the party. And as I say, those opposing forces are really important. Remember, you know, it's now a male party, and there are some who will be sniggering at the Labour Party at the moment, because you know what? There was times when in 2011, for instance, when Fianna Fáil was almost wiped out, and Labour had this huge surge. One of the things they talked about continually from many of the Labour sources was how few females were there, and how male and pale and all of this kind of thing was thrown at them. And you had a Fianna Fáil party saying, well, you know, look, we didn't get any women elected. Wasn't it? We didn't have any. We didn't get any elected. Now, look, there's a whole other thing about women in politics, that they're not actually being moved up through the party ranks. Deal with that another time. But on the surface, there was a lot within parties and a lot of kind of feeling. Labour kind of dragged this on a bit, that, you know, they have this great party of equality and so on. Now they're probably having a little snigger going, how do you like it now? How do you like it when the electorate decide to get rid of all your female TDs and get rid of some of the people you really liked? It makes it a bit difficult, doesn't it? And it makes it difficult to renew yourself. So they are facing challenges, and they're facing challenges because other parties are going to be looking at it and saying, we don't actually quite sure that, you know, we want to help Labour out here. The Social Democrats having the same number of TDs is difficult for Labour. And looking at it, they're going to say, well, look, it's difficult when you look at Sinn Féin, because just across the way, Sinn Féin are a big, strong force. Now, one of the things that I think has to be touched on here is Social Democrats won 6 seats, and so did the Labour Party. The Social Democrats is a form, or has come from, the Labour Party generally. And that's where its origins were from, and most of its ethos would be in line with what would be have been some Labour Party thinking on issues. So they're always stealing each other's clothes a bit here. On the other hand, if they were together, that would have been 12 TDs. And I go back to the time when Democratic Left was a separate party to Labour. And bringing them inside the tent and rejoining those two parties was seen like a great achievement, because it at least brought some figures back to the party that stopped. And Labour has been continually stifled by this thing of people leaving the party and then other parties setting up and new parties. If they actually had those 12 together, in the Labour Party, it would be a force again. Without that, you end up with two parties at 6. Meanwhile, on the other side of that, you have Sinn Féin gathering at pace, and Sinn Féin willing to say, look, we can mop up a lot of left-wing seats. And you have Sinn Féin planning to become an even bigger party by mopping up left-wing votes, particularly hard left votes, and saying they'll all be ours. We'll suck in those seats. And you have a Labour Party and a Social Democrats that are going to be under threat a lot from that kind of thing. And yet, they're two separate parties. One does have to say, I'm not saying they should combine, but I am saying it's long-term going to be difficult to keep those two parties very separate for very long when they could be having real influence. Now, Labour need to look at that, and they need to say, right, well, we can't afford to lose any more ground to the Social Democrats. They should be Labour seats where they're there. We cannot afford to lose ground to Sinn Féin. And it's a real battle to combat Sinn Féin at the size Sinn Féin is now compared to the size the Labour Party is. It's not impossible to do, though. But there's a couple of things that you're going to look at in this leadership contest. First of all, what is the Labour Party? Alan Kelly is going to put in a huge effort to be Labour Party leader. Now, Alan Kelly is probably the kind of guy that traditionally I might have been attracted to in a political party, insofar as he seems to come across as pragmatic and gets on with stuff, not ideologically based, not anything. But you know what? If Alan Kelly takes leadership of Labour, what you're going to see is Labour becoming a lot more like Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. It's that kind of rural politician approach that is about, look, we get stuff done. And it's not surprising to me that those outside of Dublin have quickly rallied to the likes of Willie Penrose here in the Longford Westmead old constituency, where Willie was a TD for many years. Not surprising to me that he has supported Alan Kelly, because that's the kind of politics they see as working. This is, you go into county council, you do whatever you have to do with whoever you have to, you get on, you be a TD, and this is about simple pragmatic policies and about rural Ireland, and that's the kind of politics they're used to. And probably look on with suspicion at some of the more Dublin-centric ideological stuff that's coming out. So Alan Kelly, I think, is going to say to people, look, we've had a lot of this thinking and arguing with ourselves on social issues. I'm going to be a leader here who's going to absolutely take the party. I'll get us attention. I'll attack. They won't like facing me on the Dáil floor. when I get time, I'm going to really, when I go on TV and I go, I'm going to be a real attack dog and I'm going to hit them hard. And they're going to really come up against somebody that, yes, can mix it up with the best of them. And we're going to talk about policy. It's going to be simple. Our policy is going to be there every day. Economic policy, getting people into jobs, doing things. Not abstract stuff. Really practical stuff. And if the Labour Party believes, look, that's where we've lost the ground, and there is a strong argument to say that is why they've lost ground, then, you know, Alan Kelly is going to be looking at being onto a winner here. However, he is going to face, in particular, I think his biggest threat for me, looking out at it, is Eoin O'Riordan. And again, Eoin is, I think, probably symptomatic of something else within in Labour Party, which is he does bring that thinking. He does bring a huge social background to it. He is famed for his stances on particular social issues. That is somewhere that matters to Labour Party people. And if they don't want to lose that, then they've got to look at somebody like Eoin O'Riordan. But what they really need to look at is, how do you win? If you're not winning, if you're a Labour Party and you're the Labour movement, and you get back to that idea, what is the Labour Party and the Labour movement? It is about workers. Where are the majority of workers in Ireland? You're going to find it in Dublin, working class Dublin areas. And I say this before, harsh reality of politics. I hate to say it as a cult sheet, but it's true. If you don't have a Dublin leader, officially, you need a Dublin leader in the party. Otherwise, Dublin doesn't vote with you. It doesn't react well to having non-Dublin faces that they can look to and say, yeah, that's who is the kind of Dublin leader, at least. I think Labour, if they're going to make an impact in Dublin, will need a Dublin leader. And that's the crux of the issue here. And they need to need somebody who can be seen as a working class Dublin person who understands just being normal. And when I say that, that doesn't mean, oh, you have to have a working class Dublin person that's, you know, it just means somebody that gets ordinary people and gets ordinary struggles. They don't have to necessarily be particularly, you know, coming poor themselves or anything like that, but they do have to be able to say, look, I get it. I have a normal upbringing. So I get the problems of having to juggle your shopping at the end of the week. And I get the problems of, you know, I've grown up with on estates or with people in estates, and I know these issues. I've worked with people on them, and I understand what people face, because that's what people want. They want understanding. They want someone that can reach out. And I think that's a particularly Dublin thing that does have to be addressed, because there are very unique problems facing our capital city. And even the likes of people like me who are not there and haven't grown up among it, it's difficult to say, you know, oh, except at a theoretical level, what it is or how you're going to address it. So I think it does need that. And therefore, I think, in truth, if Labour is going to be able to reclaim its left-wing values and it's going to reposition itself at the heart of workers, workers' rights, jobs, trade unions, people, ordinary people making ends meet, then I think it needs somebody in Dublin who does that. And I think the only person they've got there is Eoin O'Riordan. And that's the choice that they have to make. And it's not going to be an easy one for them. Mind you, it is something that I think next week we could return to a little bit more when we see just how that leadership race is developing. Turning to a couple of the other things I was asked, Joan Cook asked me just to comment on the disturbing prospect of a polarised society. We do have a polarised society, and you can see it in Ireland, you can see it worldwide. Societies are more polarised. It is a very interesting thing. A book I'd recommend to anybody out there is a book by a guy called Cass Sunstein, behavioural economist, and a book he wrote called Republic. And in that, he talks about this polarising of democracy and how effectively social media and that does create a more polarised society. And I'm a big advocate for understanding these things because, you know, one of the problems I think we've got in society is we tend to take social media and just say it's bad and stay away from it, log off, get your head out of it, forget it, find things elsewhere. That's not going to happen. And young people are not going to do that. So therefore, it's not a case of telling them, oh, stop it and don't get your news there and don't be looking at it and close off your phone. It's why I'm really against these ridiculous ideas and that people come out holier than thou and they say, oh, our school has banned mobile phones, you know, and you're not allowed to have any, or we have a rule on how many hours you're allowed to be on screen time and social media. I find all that, I have to say, a load of nonsense, because all you're doing is holding back a wave where you're trying to say, look how good we are. It's complete virtue signaling in my mind, by telling kids, oh, look, we got you off your phones and forced you off them. They're going to be back on them. And the problem is, what you need to do in society, in order to stop it becoming more polarized, is teach people how to use these things, not how to give them up, not how to shut them down, not how to get off them, how to actually use them. That's the bit we're missing in society, and that's the bit that's making us polarized, because too many of us do look at things and we don't actually get a sense of, how do I use this stuff? How do I get this? How do I assess the news on it? Because one of the things that Cass Sunstein talks about in his book Republic is how, when you can, when once we've lost that general news, there was a time you've opened a newspaper, you were forced to see everything on the page. So some of it might be news you weren't interested in. Some of it might be news that you didn't care about, or views from other people. Nowadays, you can select everything to give you pretty much your, you've algorithms working away. So when you put on Facebook or Twitter or anything else, you follow people that you like to follow. And if somebody's giving a contrarian view, you can immediately go, I don't have to follow them, I block them. Or I mute them, or I just won't follow them in the first place. So therefore, we only hear views that we like. We only hear the things repeated to us from people who validate our opinions. And the thing is, that science and behavioural science tells us, once we have a view and somebody else validates that, or a couple of people validate it, we become more extreme in that view because we think everybody agrees with us. And everybody tells us, yes, you're right to have said that. Maybe you weren't. Maybe a lot of other people are thinking, I think it's dodgy you say that or you think that way. But you know what? Once other people start telling us we're right, we become convinced about it. So polarized society is happening. You've seen that a lot more in the UK, you see it in the US, and you're seeing it in Ireland. It's right or wrong, and it's black or it's white. The way you cut through that is by not moving at these interminably slow paces, first of all, that politics seems to move at. The debates have moved on and people have had them and they've reached a conclusion before politics is ready to catch up. And politics has, there's something going to change in politics, which is about speed. And that's going to change in the next decade. And whoever is ahead of that change and ahead of that speed is going to be a big winner on it, because it needs to. It can't operate at the same pace because debates move on far too quickly and opinions become formulated and people become so embedded in that position far too quickly. And that's one thing. And the second thing is just understanding for all of us exactly why and where we should seek out those views that differ from ours and how we should make them into something that we actually can debate, and to feel that, you know what, debate is something that is worthwhile. One of the reasons I started doing this podcast was because I think we don't spend enough time. Everything is down to a soundbite. Everything's down to a couple of minutes, and that forms your view. I think we should actually be having these long conversations, and we need to discuss things, and we need to eke out every eventuality. But most of all, we do need to start understanding that whatever anybody else's views are, and it goes back, I think, to that point on government formation we started out with here today, there needs to be a point at which parties back off a little bit on that you're corrupt, you're a terrorist, all of that kind of stuff, and kind of say, look what, people voted for this party, they deserve some respect, and you know what, everybody is trying to do something positive. And this kind of thing of, if you're in that party, you're obviously evil, and that party is only interested in doing evil things. You know what, sometimes you take people at their word, and we've got to start assuming everybody is trying, even if we disagree with how they're trying to do something positive. And then it becomes a little bit more, I think the conversation benefits from it. On the same line, I know that Michael Sheehan asked me about the creeping menace of intimidation and savagery into the public realm. And it does follow in that. But you know what? People are brave sometimes when they're behind the keyboard, and we all say nasty things, and you know what? We shouldn't. We should try to be, Yeah, I said last week, a simple rule: is it true, is it necessary, is it kind? And if you fail on two of those, don't say it. But look, there will always be issues. I think there is a level of trying to intimidate people in it, but equally, I think we can get overhyped here that this is new. It's not. It's always been there. We just didn't always get to read it. We didn't always get to hear it. But it was always said down in the pub. We just didn't care when it was said down in the pub. But there is an element here that I think we have to be careful of. And I think that is something that is going to be a real challenge. Also had a couple of people talking about the predictions of it. Ronan Madigan said, I predict an FF minority government with FG providing confidence and supply. And that's possible. Maybe, I think, Ronan. I just think, again, it's going to be a major risk for Fine Gael providing the confidence and supply. I think they would prefer the coalition if the coalition doesn't happen. You know, look, at some point, they have to face up to the question of, if you've closed off all the options, then it can't be a case of any old government is better than a second election. Sometimes you go back and you say, look, we stuck to our guns. We believe we won't deal with these parties and we're going back to you. And that's better and more upfront than saying we'll hobble something together. I think there'd be a price on confidence and supply. I think they wore out its welcome the last time. And I think they're going to find it difficult to apply it again on this occasion, simply because they let it last so long. So even if it does happen, I don't think it would last. I know Mary Brady came in on that and she said that independents are key on it and said that she wouldn't underestimate the importance of independents. I think it is, if we're talking about government formation and the regional group of nine Ronan mentions, bringing up the how it would work. The problem I have with all that is it's playing the numbers to get a government, and I'm not quite sure what the purpose of that government actually is, and that's the question we need to start answering at a strategic level. Why are we going into government? What is there going to be the purpose of this group of people coming together? Not can they come together, but what's the purpose of them coming together? What are they going to achieve and what can they achieve long term? Because just doing it for the sake of getting something in is not exactly going to be an answer I think the public are particularly interested in either. But I think the independents will play a big move on that. Hugh S. also said to me that moving on in Ireland means that no one should vote for FG, FF or SF ever again. Yeah, look, here I'm going to touch on a quick point for you again. And I know why people might be saying that, oh, well, because there's always been this line, don't vote for Fianna Fáil, don't vote for Fine Gael, let's move on, let's vote for another party, Sinn Féin. Now you could kind of argue, well, put Sinn Féin into that and maybe we're back to they're all civil war parties, etc., etc. So moving on should be completely new parties. Look, I hate to be the old cynic in all of this, but I say it time and time again. Politics doesn't change. Politics reflects what people actually are thinking and where people sit on issues. And parties can call themselves what they like and they can position themselves where they like. They can't change the shape of the electorate. The electorate will shape them. And we've got to stop this idea that Irish political parties have somehow shaped the country in terms of their thinking. And that if we change and chop and change the parties, they will then force the electorate to, the electorate will force the parties to morph. The reason you have Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael looking similar is that's where the votes were. That's where, if there had been a massive rush of left-wing votes out there at any point that was overwhelmingly wanting a hard left government, Fianna Fáil would have been over that like a hotcake donkeys years ago. The reason they were centrist is that's where the votes are. So, we can talk about this forever and talk about moving on and about new parties and everything else. The truth is, no matter what combination of parties you end up with 100 years from now, I will promise you, you will still have people saying, we have two parties that are pretty much the exact same thing. That's democracy, because that's where the votes are. And that's how it will always end up. And you can create differences. You can give them lefty and righty names. You can tell how you're doing certain policies, but ultimately when you get under the skin of it, you're only changing window dressing and how different they actually are going to be, because it's the practicalities and the personalities that people will vote for at the end of the day. none of us have time to go through the manifestos and go through the detail or understand every detail. So really, voting comes down not to policy, but to trust. Do I trust this person to lead us and whatever policies, be they right wing, left wing, anything, do I actually trust them that what they're telling me is the truth? And if I do, and it sounds good and it sounds better for me, then I vote for them. I may not understand the economics behind it. I don't have time. I've got to get on with my own job and my own work. So I don't have time to go through everything in detail. What I can do is ask, who's the best person I trust to put in charge of this? And it sounds like they're going to do a good job. And that's still going to be, I think, the dominating factor. A couple of others that were there. Chris Andrews was onto me here, and I know Chris is of course a Sinn Féin representative now, and he said, I feel that the negativity and attacks by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and friends in all media are more about getting their members to support the FFFG deal, whipping many members into a frenzy, and the FFFG deal becomes a case for saving the country from awful SF. Glenna Lynch chimed in on this too, and she said that's exactly what they're doing. They need forgiveness from their own base for what they're about to do. It's sad to see the extent to which they're being facilitated. Sadder again to see how fast and loose they're willing to play with something as important as the Good Friday Agreement. I think that is a particularly challenging position for the parties. I think there's a little bit, there is a little bit of truth in it. I think when you look at where the parties are coming from, they do need, if Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going to get together, they certainly do need to convince a certain sector of their own support that we cannot do Sinn Féin. So those of you that might like Sinn Féin or think there's a better option in Sinn Féin, we need to hold you together and say to you, these guys are really, really evil. So there is a certain amount of that has to go on. I think that's natural. I don't think it's wrong either, insofar as, you know, that's plain politics. What you would hope with in any party is that there are other voices that are strong enough to stand up and go, hold on, I'm not buying it. And if that doesn't exist in the party, well, then the party is already on a course to taking the decided action. But if it's a case of speaking to their own members in advance of the deal, it probably is, and it's probably a little bit less than trying to convince the public at this stage that, oh, well, Sinn Féin can't be worked at. And it's a little bit more of convincing their own party, this is the only option we had. Don't hate us for it. I think, you know, if they were given a different, slightly different result, it might be different. You know, look, that's... You know, that's how politics works. We can't expect it to be different on that score. Everybody's speaking to their base. Equally, I'll say this, Chris. If I were in Sinn Féin right now and I wanted to be in government and to succeed in government, I would be actually publishing our offer of government. I would be showing them how reasonable we are. I would be saying to them, here you go, this is what we're saying to the Fianna Fáil members, this is what we're offering you, we're going to give you Micheál Martin as Taoiseach, we weren't going to bother with the rotation thing. I'm not saying that's what you would be doing, but just imagine for a moment if that was thrown out there. What a fly in the ointment that might be. What if Sinn Féin, instead of Mary Lou's powerful retort in the Dáil to everything that was, that she said, look, I'm sorry Micheál feels the way he does, and he's clearly been misinformed, but you know what, I find that a real shame given the proud history of the Fianna Fáil party, given its achievements in the left wing of politics, given all it's had to do, what it could have achieved. If Sinn Féin were doing that, Micheál Martin would be in a much more difficult position, because you would have Sinn Féin appealing to the Fianna Fáil base effectively over his head. But you and I know that's not going to happen either, is it? And it's not going to happen because Sinn Féin has to talk to its base. And all of these attacks on Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael that they're getting sucked into, they're about talking to their base and saying, yes, Fianna Fáil, corrupt, evil, money-grabbing shower, you know, Fine Gael, posh boys, all of that kind of thing, that's going to speak well to their base. And that's what you're going to hear a lot at, I would contend, on the rallies. Because that's what parties have to do. And I don't see anything wrong with it. I think it's just natural. It's a shame. Sometimes you'd like to see someone in a really powerful enough position to be able to say, you know what, I am going to appeal to other parties and I'm going to stay out a bit negative here. I'm going to be really, really positive. I'm really positive about the contribution all other parties have made. Because you know what, you can always go back on that a little while later when you find yourself in that position. But you could experiment with it for a while, but we all know it just doesn't happen. It's not the adversarial form politics has. Tom Nolan, who I know is also a Sinn Féin supporter, and he said to me, this FNFG coalition has been planned since election night, or even before, long before. The media smears are just to soften up the voters to accept this. Hope the Greens, etc., have the sense to stay out. And here's the difficulty for the Greens. The Greens want to be in government. And they are coming to the realisation that if the other parties are saying to them, no, Sinn Féin's not an option, then the only way the Greens get into government is by doing a deal. And the Greens may be forced into feeling they have to do that deal, or they are the ones who cause the next election. And they're just not sure they want to be that. It would take a brave party, if you're in the Greens, to say, okay, we're going out there and we're going to allow another election on this, because we've just had this great return of seats. We've had a potential at government. They're trying to get beyond all the politics to sorting out climate change and big issues like that. Even one budget could make a big difference there. So they must be tempted by that. But the question for them is, and I touched on this in previous weeks, is it going to harm them? Is it going to end up being is it going to end up being another government where the Greens are told, oh, what were you guys thinking? Every time we vote for you, you put somebody in power that we don't like, and then put in a whole load of policies that are dodgy. And there's also the question, like, if we want to tackle things like climate change, it's going to be really difficult in any government that's not having absolute real power to go in and has a real sense of mandate. Without that, that's going to be a really problematic government. And I think the Greens, if they were given their option, given that Sinn Féin had a mood of change, if they could have convinced Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil to work together and for that government to actually implement really green policies, I think that would have given them a lot of cover and would probably be quite a popular from the green base kind of idea of, we got our policies through and we gave people what they wanted and we were up that day. Going in with Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, it already puts them on the back foot, in the same way as having to accept in 2007, after talking about so much about change, that they had to bring Fianna Fáil back in. It was difficult for them because there were no options and they're finding themselves in a similar position again. But is it real change? That's what's always going to be asked about them, that they don't have the change that people are actually demanding. So, look, that's where we are at, and that's pretty much where the week has brought us. Coming up in the next week, there is going to be a lot more debate about government. It's unlikely we're going to see much progress, but maybe, who knows, somebody will be brave and take some kind of decisive action. Just to give you again a heads up that as of next week, we'll be starting our new series, which is looking back at elections, each individual elections. And we're starting with the first election of the modern age, 1977, and all that it meant for Irish politics. And of course, after that, we will be looking at each election right up to 2020, so that we get a sense of the journey Ireland has been on in the modern age as regards elections, as regards the issues. How much has changed, and in some ways how little has changed at various times. So do tune in, do watch out for that, and hopefully next week we'll have something to catch up on the government side as well, and on some of the issues for the other parties, like the Labour Party's interesting leadership contest. Other than that, that's it for this week, and I hope you have enjoyed the podcast. And please, once again, we do depend on your support. So every time that you mention us, you tweet us, if you like it, then give us a like, give us a follow. and let people know about it, share it. If you've enjoyed this episode, share the episode, please. It does help a huge amount and it makes it all worthwhile in bringing it all together. And of course, we are trying to keep it, that we don't have the advertising or anything like that on it to interrupt it either. So look, thank you for listening once again, and thank you for giving us your time. And look, have a great week ahead and all the very best for it.